Hello and welcome to Korean Context, a behind-the-scenes conversation with the scholars, artists, and opinion makers who bridge our two worlds. This podcast was brought to you by the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C. I'm Martha Legutsky, and I'll be your host today. Joining me in the Korean Context studio today is Ms. Tammy Overby, Vice President for Asia at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Prior to taking her current position at the Chamber, Ms. Overby lived and worked in South Korea for 21 years, the last 14 of which she spent leading the American Chamber of Commerce Korea, where she worked to improve the business environment for member companies. During her time there, Ms. Overby raised the profile of the American Chamber of Commerce to make it the largest, most influential foreign business group in Korea.
My name is Tammy Overby. I'm the Vice President of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's Asia Program, and I'm also the President of the U.S. Korea Business Council. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. Would you please talk about your own experience with Korea?
Yes, I started working in Korea in 1988 with AIG. Spent a few years with AIG, also worked for a company called Mercer Consulting, and then the last 14 years of my 21-year experience in Korea was running the American Chamber of Commerce on the ground in Korea, so had a fabulous time living and working in Seoul.
I'm interested to hear a little bit more about the more than decade that you spend at the American Chamber of Commerce in Korea. Would you please talk about any difficulties that you might have had in that position?
Well, when I first went to Korea in the late 80s and early 90s, the market was relatively closed. If American companies wanted to do business in Korea, they had to have joint ventures. And if you had a technology that Korea needed for its export machine, the door would be open, the red carpet would be rolled out, and Korea wasn't that difficult. But if you were, say, trying to sell consumer goods to a market that really wasn't open at that time, it was a very tough market. Those were the days where it was not uncommon to see groups of, and I'm afraid to say they were government-sponsored, where they would burn foreign products in public places at media events to encourage consumers not to overconsume, that they needed to be really saving for their nation. And it was only until 1995, up until 1995, on their Korean income tax form, you had to have put make and model of car. And if you had a foreign car, your chances of getting a tax audit increased significantly. But I'm also delighted to say that those days are long gone, that the Korea today is open. It's a much more integrated market into the global economy. The chamber used to say most closed market in Asia, most difficult place to do business. In early 2000, they changed that to most open market in Asia.
The FTA was negotiated during your time at the American Chamber of Commerce in Korea.
It was an incredible time to be there. Having American business on the ground actively involved, we have a very close relationship with the U.S. Trade Representative's office. Whenever they go to Korea for their quarterly bilateral negotiations, we would always meet with the USTR representatives at the beginning and usually at the end of their trip. And this has been going on for decades, because Korea did used to be such a difficult market. So when we moved into the negotiation period, that closeness didn't change, and we had a wonderful opportunity to work very closely with our negotiators to help them better understand Korea. For example, many of these the U.S. negotiators are experts on the sector in their field, but they might not have understood the cultural nuances in Korea. And sometimes those can play an important role in a negotiation. So I think they found it helpful to be able to call on us to say, we'd like to find an expert in Korean competition policy. Well, within our membership, we've got law firms, accounting firms. It was very easy for us to pretty much be able to locate whatever they needed to help in the negotiation. So it was an incredible time to be there. And that negotiation was a very difficult one because both sides were well prepared, and we wanted it to be fair and balanced. So for really a fair and balanced negotiation means at the end of the negotiation, both sides had to give and take. Which really means no one was completely happy with the agreement. That's, to me, the measure of a fair agreement. No one's completely happy, and that was certainly true when this negotiation was concluded.
Did you get the sense that U.S. businesses in Korea perceive the FTA differently from those in Washington?
Yes, to some degree, but because life in Korea, one really has to experience it. This agreement really goes so far at leveling the playing field. The U.S. market is already relatively open, so it's not going to require the U.S. to change very much. But in many sectors, the Korean market still has some challenges, and this agreement will enshrine in treaty fashion and will really help open up the Korean market. The U.S. Chamber and the U.S. Korea Business Council have been taking the Korean ambassador to the U.S. around America on something called a grassroots tour, Growing Jobs Across America tour. And we've met with many editorial boards, and often those reporters will ask, sir, it seems like the U.S. is gaining more than South Korea. Why does South Korea want this agreement? And the Korean ambassador answers very eloquently that it is true in the short and medium term, the U.S. will gain the most, but long term, these changes will help ensure Korea's future competitiveness. And it really, Korea lives in a tough neighborhood. They've got China, the world's fastest growing economy on one side, Japan, the world's largest, one of the world's larger economic economies on the other side. So South Korea really does need to stay nimble and ahead of their competition. And this agreement, this really is a 21st century trade agreement. It will help ensure Korea does that.
What, from your perspective, are the strongest benefits of the agreement?
It levels the playing field, and it really helps us take our economic relationship to the next level. We have a very strong security relationship, a very strong political relationship. The U.S. and South Korea cooperate in so many other areas. But on the economic side, there's room for growth. And it's absolutely essential that we get this done quickly, because U.S. market share in Korea and, frankly, all across Asia is dropping rapidly. We used to be South Korea's largest trade partner. We're number four today. China, Japan, the EU, and the U.S., we're in fourth place. Unfortunately, that picture is mirrored across Asia. So this agreement is going to help us regain some market share. So it is absolutely essential for farmers, for manufacturers, for our service industries, that we get this agreement ratified as soon as possible.
One of the two biggest issues holding up the FTA has been beef, the other one being autos. Just to focus on beef for a moment, do you have any insight as to why U.S. beef is controversial in Korea?
Yes. The Korea beef market was closed in 2003 when one cow came down with a case of mad cow, BSE. And the market was closed for several years. We negotiated a protocol to reopen it, and actually President Lee Myung-bak, the current president of Korea, had only been in power a couple of months when he visited Washington for the first time. And he announced that they were going to reopen the Korean market to U.S. beef. All my Korean friends and all my American friends living and working in Seoul will remember the tens of thousands of candlelight demonstrators that came out in protest of this announcement. And frankly, partly I think it's a lot of misunderstanding about the safety and the safety of American beef. The agreement now, the beef being shipped into Korea today, and by the way, we went from in 2003 about over an 80% market share, the U.S. beef in Korea, to today we're scratching that back. For several years we had zero. The Australian beef flooded the market to fill that vacuum, and now the U.S. market, our cattlemen are regaining the share, and we're a little around 50% of the market. And I'd like to say that about the Korea FTA, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and the National Meat Export Federation, they are all strong endorsers of this Korea Free Trade Agreement. But it comes down in Korea to about the buyer's confidence. Are they confident that U.S. beef is safe? And we're seeing today that they're gaining confidence. I wouldn't say that it's completely there yet, because we haven't regained our full market share. But it is back on the menus at restaurants and in hotels, and you can buy it in the large department stores now. A very good sign, and it's moving in the right direction.
I was actually living in Korea during those protests, and I can remember just how emotional they were.
Absolutely. You had family members. You had entire families. First of all, one needs to know a little bit about Korea's history. It's only been a democracy since 1987, and many parents today, they were student demonstrators in their time that helped bring democracy to Korea. So for many of them, it was sort of a throwback to their youth. They had these very peaceful, initially peaceful, candlelight vigils, and you would see mothers and fathers with strollers and candles saying, "We want to protect our children." I would have to say that there was a misunderstanding among many Korean media outlets about the beef situation. Some of the descriptions and some of the reporting maybe wasn't as scientifically based as it should have been. But again, I think what we've seen since then is the Korean government is doing a much better job explaining to the people why they are taking the steps they're taking. And again, let the consumer decide. And what we're seeing is the consumers like American beef and they're buying American beef. We don't want to do anything to upset that trend.
You described that measures have been taken successfully to increase the presence of U.S. beef in Korea. But from the standpoint of the FTA in particular, what can be done to move that issue forward?
I think there really is not, I don't think there's anything specific in the agreement, but I think what may come out of further additional discussions between our two governments is maybe a clearer roadmap of what constitutes confidence building and at what point will the market fully reopen. Right now we have U.S. exporters and the Korean importers have an agreement that the U.S. will not export beef over 30 months. And I think at some point, and the governments have blessed that agreement, I think at some point there will be a roadmap that says, okay, when do we believe the market confidence is such that we can take the age restrictions off and allow beef of any age? When do the Korean consumers have that kind of confidence? And I think additional conversations are going on now to determine when that will be.
Now let's turn to the other intractable issue, autos. The FTA addresses Korea's tariff, tax system, environmental and safety standards, and also creates a special dispute settlement mechanism. Why doesn't the U.S. auto industry accept the current FTA provisions on autos?
Well, frankly, I believe it's because of a lot of old history and because the industry, frankly, doesn't trust the Korean government. And I believe that that some of that information, that old information, and some of the ill will that is felt is maybe, again, a bit out of date. We took Ambassador Han Duck-soo to Detroit this summer, where he spoke to the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce. He had an audience of over 150 members, and he started his comments by saying, "I am here to acknowledge that the Korean government did used to have some policies and practices that were not as open as they should have been. But I'm also here to tell you those days are long gone." He said, no one wants to see more Fords, Chryslers, and General Motor cars on the streets of Korea than I do. And I know Ambassador Han and have known him for almost 20 years. He's very sincere. And I think he is a good example of the new Korea. Again, I would say that the old Korea was built with a closed economy, a command and controlled economy where the government chose winners and losers. And during my tenure in Korea, I think I had the good fortune to watch Korea really open up and blossom. You know, we saw it in situations with Walmart, where Koreans were very reluctant to allow Walmart to open stores in South Korea. But in 1996, they opened their first store. And many Koreans were afraid that Walmart would drive out all of the small mom-and-pop wholesalers and distributors. Well, 10 years later, after that opening, I was in Korea to see Walmart shutter their stores with the acknowledgement that they really didn't understand the Korean market well enough and they were going to focus on China. So I think during that time, we've seen Korea gain remarkable self-confidence. We've seen Korean products compete with global leaders, whether it's ships, semiconductors, electronics, autos, steel. Korean products are in the world among world leaders. So I think Korea, this really is a new Korea, the Korea of the future.
Given that the history of this ill will goes back so far, bringing back to the beginning of your answer, can we expect to resolve these issues?
I actually think we can. I'm relatively optimistic because I believe both sides are sincere about trying to resolve it. And I think that the, first of all, the negotiations that will be held by our government are being conducted by the best negotiators in the world. Wendy Cutler, America's, she's our chief negotiator for Korea. Her new counterpart, has recently served in the embassy in Washington here for many years, and they know one another very well. They solved a lot of difficult issues together, and now he is her counterpart, Deputy Minister Che. And the current Korean Trade Minister, Kim Jong-un, was Wendy's counterpart, chief negotiator, when the deal was negotiated. So, his counterpart, Ron Kirk, and his colleague, Assistant USTR Demetrius Marantis, Demetrius in particular, knows this agreement very well. He was working with Senator Baucus during the negotiation. So I think we have a very unique team of negotiators who know one another well, who really have a good track record of solving difficult issues together, and who understand that this is a historic moment for both countries, and they cannot fail. They must get this done. And to our auto companies, I honestly believe that they are much better off with this agreement than without it. Without the agreement, they get nothing. But as you so eloquently pointed out, with the agreement, this agreement resolves a lot of their concerns. But I do think their biggest issue right now, it's a lack of trust. And I think this is really the time, and I'm so pleased to see, again, that Ambassador Han was willing to go to Detroit to meet with the companies with an outstretched hand saying, I acknowledge the past, but I want us to move forward, and the government of Korea is very sincere about trying to resolve these issues.
Now, moving away from the issues themselves and more on to timing, both President Lee and President Obama have set the G20 summit in Seoul as the deadline for reaching an agreement on outstanding issues on the CORUS FTA. Do you think this deadline is achievable?
I absolutely do, but I'm realistic, and I will tell you it will be an extremely difficult deadline to meet. But I am supremely confident in both sides' negotiators, but I do think it's going to go to the last minute. Both President Obama and President Lee have said they would like to see a deal before they meet in G20 in Seoul in November 10 or 11 or 11 or 12. And so I believe a deal is possible. And also I believe it's essential because the world is watching. I think this has become bigger than just the U.S.-Korea. I think you will have countries all over the world, the WTO countries, Doha basically, watching to see, can this U.S. administration do a difficult trade bill? If they see this deal is done, then I think we're going to see real renewed hope from around the world of wanting to do trade deals with America. And at a time when our economy is struggling so much, unemployment is so high, these deals create jobs. These deals lower barriers and help us better access the world's market. And as you know, 95% of the global market is outside the United States. So we must be able to access the markets in order to grow and create jobs, and that's what we have to do.
In the United States, one might have the impression that the discussions the two sides are having on the FTA are one-sided. What kind of issues might Korea want to raise with the United States?
That's a tough question because the reality is the U.S. market is fairly open already. However, I think that we could see the Koreans asking for things on anti-dumping or countervailing duties. One concern we have, and I believe both governments understand it very well, is I believe it would be a terrible tragedy if they reopened the negotiation, if they reopened the agreement. I believe that it is a large document, over 1,000 pages. It's very complex, and if you reopen it and start adding things to the discussion list, I believe it's very easy for the agreement to sink on both sides. So what I predict will happen is that they will maintain those two primary issues. They will keep the focus on that. I do think the U.S. will have to concede something. It needs to be a balanced agreement. So if South Korea gives on something, the U.S. it would be appropriate that they gave on something. There could also be a request for H-1B-1 visas, for example, or I think there are creative ways that both sides can find solutions, side letters, additional agreements. But I think personally that would be a terrible tragedy to reopen the current agreement, because I believe that would fail.
Recently, the EU and Korea announced their FTA will go into effect July 1st of next year, while there's no firm date for implementation on the CORUS FTA. What are the likely impacts for the United States if it is unable to see the CORUS FTA implemented in 2011?
I think it will be devastating. The reality is American companies compete head-to-head with European companies in many different sectors. And if suddenly they get a leg up, or they have preferred access to the Korean market and American firms don't, what we're going to see is American firms being locked out of a market. We're going to see farmers, our ag market, we'll see our manufacturing, our services. We are going to see, I believe, just a terrible, terrible tragedy. And I pray very much that doesn't happen. I think given a level playing field, Americans can compete with anyone. But if you give the Europeans an advantage, a preferential advantage that they would have if their deal goes through before ours does, it's going to be just so unfortunate to America. The Chamber did a study recently, and we looked at the cost of inaction. If the European-Korean deal went into effect and ours didn't, we're looking at a job loss in the neighborhood of over 345,000 Americans would lose their jobs. So that we can't let that happen.
And finally, I'd like to ask you about some of the perceptions or perhaps misperceptions of Korea from the American side. Have you encountered any serious misperceptions from the American side of Korea, and do you think that that impacts the way that these negotiations have progressed?
That's a really good question, and yes, I have. And probably the easiest one to point to is the auto sector. I think many Americans fail to realize how quickly Korea can and is changing. Many people who traveled to Korea in the late 80s and the early 90s remember a closed Korea. In fact, if they attended a briefing by the American Chamber of Commerce in Korea, where I was the president and CEO, they would have heard me say that, those very words, Korea, the most closed market in Asia. But I think if they haven't been back and they really haven't maintained a close and constant touch, they won't have seen some subtle and some very not so subtle changes as the Korean market has opened up. Many people ask me what caused the market opening of South Korea. I believe in 1996 when they joined the OECD, that was the beginning. But when Korea joined the OECD, when they submitted their application, they did it in a very Korean way, in a way that my friends at the OECD had never seen an application like this. Basically, they said, yes, we want to be a member, but we want to delay all of these things, and we want exceptions for all of these other things. And the folks at the OECD said, look, you either are in or you're out. You can't be a member of the OECD and then have all those delays and exceptions. And so I said to my friends in the OECD, that's the Koreans' beginning negotiating point. What you need to do is now go to work and start carving those down, cutting them out. And it took several years for them to do it, but they were successful. And in 1996, Korea joined. Then in 97, 98, the Asian flu hit five countries in Asia, and it hit South Korea very hard. In 1998, the Korean economy shrank 10.9%. But this, and this is a point that many Westerners miss. In 1999, the Korean economy grew over 10%. So it shrank, contracted, and then the next year bounced back. How could they do that so quickly? That's what the other four Asian nations, the AmChams in all of Asia, have a very close network, and we meet twice a year. And so when we came back in 1999, I'm smiling. Of the five economies, I'm the only one smiling. What's wrong with Tammy? Well, Tammy's very happy because the Koreans have, they have seen the light. Market opening is the way to go. This is going to be a completely liberalized open economy as quickly as the Korean government can make it so. So that to me has been the biggest misperception, is that people who remember the old Korea, and again, I want to really encourage them to visit Korea today, talk to government officials now, go see the ambassador, talk about the new Korea and the future Korea, the Korea that while America has been taking a time out on trade, has been very aggressively going after trade deals with a lot of other partners. It's not just the EU-Korea. The Korea-India deal went into effect January of this year, and they're going to start negotiating with China early next year. The rest of the world is moving rapidly, and America is being left behind. We have got to ratify this agreement as soon as possible.
Thank you so, so much for your time today, Tammy. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and we look forward to next time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. For more information about this episode, this podcast, and upcoming KEI events, please check out our podcast page at keia.podbean.com. As always, please feel free to send any questions, comments, or suggested podcast topics to me at podcast@keia.org. I'd love to hear from you, so please don't be shy. Well, that's all for now. Thanks so much for listening. It was a pleasure to have you, and we look forward to seeing you next time on Korean Context. Bye.